Hey, everybody. This episode of the Press Row Podcast is brought to you by Franchise Hockey Manager 4, which is on sale right now for the Stanley Cup Final. You can get Franchise Hockey Manager 4 right now for 75% off, just $9.99. And you can see if you can bring your favorite team to the Stanley Cup. Franchise Hockey Manager 4 is the most hockey ever, featuring not only all the teams and rosters from this year's NHL, but every team and season ever throughout the league's history, plus tons of international competitions and foreign leagues as well. There is no other hockey strategy game that comes close to Franchise Hockey Manager 4 in terms of depths and ways to have fun. So check out Franchise Hockey Manager 4 today for 75% off now just through June 10th. It's just $9.99. Get it on Steam or right from us at ootpdevelopments.com. today.
All right, here we are. We're at that kind of interesting spot in the year for sports gaming where we've had a few releases just recently. They're in the rearview mirror now, but we have a lot to look forward to because in a couple weeks, we're going to be getting EA Play and E3, and who knows what's going to come out of that. We always get some information and some trailers on Madden and FIFA, maybe NHL and NBA Live, and who, you know, there's always a possibility of a surprise announcement or something from 2K. Not traditionally what happens, but there's always the possibility of that. So we're looking forward to that coming up starting on June 9th and then the days that follow. But first, before we get to our main topics, which include our expectations for E3 and EA Play, Rich Grisham is here. Rich Grisham, what have you been playing recently?
I have been recently playing the new World Cup FIFA stuff. It's really great. I am having a blast. I know we're going to talk about it more after this, so I won't say that much yet until we get into it, other than to say I played like four matches and have thoroughly enjoyed them. Now, I'm also preparing for the big online World Cup that we're in, Brian, along with several other friends of the show. I am Germany in that World Cup. And in fact, after we record the show, I've got my first of my three games in my group going up against, I believe, Argentina, and Commissioner Donnie Moore, well, not the commissioner of this league, but, you know, Donnie Moore, the ratings are Commish Don. So that's exciting. And so in preparation for that, I've been playing a World Cup mode, I don't want to call it offline mode, but, you know, the single player, just World Cup. You just jump in as the World Cup. As Germany, my first game, I lost 3-1 to Mexico. My second match, I won against a country I can't remember. And in the third game, I won big time, like 5 or 6-0 against South Korea, and so was able to advance out of the group. But after I lost the first game to Mexico 3-1, I was in some trouble there in the group. But luckily, I was able to recover and get out there. But as a reward for getting out of the group, I face Brazil in the quarterfinals. So that's going to be a big challenge. So and of course I continue playing MLB The Show on the treadmill on my 162 game season, and I continue to play Pro Evolution Soccer as I get to the end of my second season where I've already won the Premier League. I got like 5 or 6 games left. I've already won it, and I'm shooting for the Champions League title over there. But the FIFA World Cup is great. The soccer, the gameplay is not quite as good as Pro Evolution, but it's really good, and the presentation is fantastic. I'm playing it on the Xbox One X, and it was a free upgrade to FIFA that I purchased a few months ago, so I'm really happy with it. And I'm not even playing the mode that seems like most other people are playing, which is, I'm sure, what Mills is going to talk about, which is the World Cup Ultimate Team stuff, which I'm interested to hear about. Not that I'm going to play it. I might dabble, but there's a whole other side to this that I have not touched, nor probably will I.
Yeah, Mills Gaming TV is here with us again. Thank you for coming on the show, Mills. So do you want to start with World Cup?
Oh, absolutely. So there's two major games that I've been playing recently. It's the World Cup upgrade for FIFA 18. And it's fun. The packs seem to have a little more oomph to them because they don't affect your offline Ultimate Team, obviously. So you can push a little bit more. It's a very condensed Ultimate Team in terms of, you know, most Ultimate Teams we know, you know, start off with like 70s to 80s. And then over, you know, 3-4 months, you move up into the 90s. Well, this one is all the World Cup players. So your pulls are going to be at a higher rate. So I did a squad building challenge for an icon, a non-tradable icon, and ended up getting Ronaldinho tonight, like in a 91 overall. So like in my first, probably 10 minutes of the game. And that's what I've seen online so far, is just a ton of great pulls. And again, it's different playing because there are higher rated guys. You're going to see more juiced squads out there, but all the normal FIFA modes are there. Like the squad building challenges, the solo stuff, the online tournaments, all that stuff you can do. You get to pick your own jerseys. I'm using the Nigerian kits, which are unbelievably fire. Awesome. Look at
this is totally separate from the other Ultimate Team, right? It's just a completely different mode. Different team, correct. Different everything. Okay.
Correct. The only thing that carries over that I was told are like points and coins. So like if you only get this for the World Cup side and you get any of the free stuff on the FIFA 18 side, you should just sell it and then bring the coins into the the World Cup Ultimate Team mode.
Gotcha.
But the big game that I've been playing that I cannot put down and has more replayability than you would ever think it would have is Detroit Become Human.
Don't spoil it for me, though.
I will not spoil. That's the cool thing is, so I streamed it and I had 3 or 4 people who had already played through it completely come into my stream and say that I got a completely different experience than they did. They had seen, and they said most of what they saw was not in mine, and everything they saw in mine was not in theirs. So what it is a story-based game set in 2038 Detroit, where androids are part of the society as purchased slaves for the most part. What we would expect androids to be now, like their servants, their maids, their nannies, stuff like that. And you take 3 roles. Connor, who is a detective / police android, Kara, who's a nanny, and Marcus, who is a servant to an elderly rich gentleman. And you would think, like most story modes, they promised this game would be, you will have an effect. And every time you hear that promise in a game, you're like, yeah, but how much of an effect can it really have? They have flowcharts after every chapter. And the flowcharts look like diagrams from rocket science because there are so many different ways you can go into this. And you can go back and play through chapters after you've played them to get different results. And when I tell you that I've heard 18 different results for each chapter, that I have, like I said, people saw mine that had nothing close to what theirs is. And I felt like actual connections to some of the characters. There's a part towards the end where something happens with Connor that I on stream actually yelled no and put my hands over my face. Like I was frozen for a second because it happened just out of nowhere. And it wasn't like a choice. Wasn't something I was expecting. So it's a really amazing experience. If you do not buy it now, definitely get it on sale at some point. If you have a PS4 or a PS4 Pro, the game's graphics are beautiful. The mechanics are very simple. There are a couple QuickTime sequences that you have to get through very quickly, but it's just a very cool experience. It's a detective story. It's a kind of a coming of age story with androids. There's love stories intertwined with certain characters. It's an amazing experience that you have to do at least once.
You know what's funny is I'm actually right now also playing Beyond Two Souls. I had never played that. I was a big fan of Heavy Rain. I really, really enjoyed Heavy Rain, and I'm naming 2 other games that are made by the same developer. What are they? Yes. Quantic Dream? That's the name, right?
Yeah, mm-hmm. Quantic Dream.
Right. Yep. So their previous game was Beyond Two Souls, which I'm just playing now, and I'm playing it now because it was on PS Plus. I don't know why. I do know why, because their previous game, as I said earlier, had been Heavy Rain, which I really, really loved. That game hit me. Like, that was, and I'm not saying it's like the greatest game of all time, but it's as an experience and as what kind of what you were talking about earlier, Mills, right? Different people having different experiences. Like, I had a very specific kind of experience playing that game. And to me, what I experienced is the true game. And then sort of reading about other experiences and how wildly different they were, it just was mind blowing. So I loved Heavy Rain. But I didn't get beyond Two Souls. I guess, you know, a couple of shows that I listened to, I think I remember, and I don't want to make them feel bad, so I won't say who it was, but basically said that they weren't enjoying Beyond Two Souls, and I guess I just forgot about it. But I'm playing it now because it came out as a PS Plus game, playing on the PS4 Pro, and it's really good. Just like what you finished your commentary there with, basically, look, play the game. I'm not saying go buy it now for full price, but at some point, if you like video games, you should play this game. That's how I feel about Beyond Two Souls as well. It's really good, visually very powerful, very interesting story, very interesting mechanics. I think it's actually got a little more video gaminess to it than what I hear about Detroit, whereas Detroit is even more of just an interactive movie with decision making as opposed to like some video gamey kind of things, which are more prevalent in Beyond Two Souls. But anyway, I'm playing Beyond Two Souls, which is by these guys, and it's also great. And if you're a PS Plus subscriber, just go hit a button and download it and play it, because it's really good.
Yeah, like you said, Heavy Rain, Beyond Two Souls. If people remember back on the PS2, it was Fahrenheit, Indigo Prophecy was by them. All the way back to the Dreamcast, there was a couple of games called, it was Omicron was a series, and they're all sort of the same idea of interactive movies, tell a great story, get the player invested, have enough mechanics to keep people interested. But yeah, if you have not played Detroit Become Human, put it on your list for at some point, maybe over the summer, where it kind of gets, you know, dies down a little bit for most of the listeners here. For sports gaming, it'll take you about 8 to 15 hours, depending on how far you get into it, for one playthrough, and it'll be worth every single second.
Yeah, Detroit, you know, from everything I'd read and seen of it, it was exactly the type of game that I would want to play, and I thought, this looks like the type of game that Rich will want to play also.
Yeah, I like these kind of games. I like Telltale games quite a bit. I've played most of the big Telltale games, and I play them usually after they've been out for a while when you can get all the episodes. I typically don't play games like this right when they come out, even though I enjoy them. It may sound sort of, you know, opposite logic that I don't typically play them when they come out, even though I enjoy them. But I also, you know, we talked about the late shift, Brian. I played through that twice now, and played it very, very, very differently the second time. It's the same kind of thing, but it's real motion. I love that experience. And again, I like the shorter things. Like 8 to 15 hours is actually kind of a big game for me. Like, that's more than most. So, but at least if I know it's 8 to 15, that's a manageable amount for me. Like, I'm still playing through God of War, and that's so big. It's much more intimidating.
So I got to go back to World Cup, because I have to talk about what happened to me. And Rich, you mentioned our online tournament. So I'm playing through in the group stage. It's my second match. And it's like the 50-somethingth minute. And I have posted this on Twitter because I was outraged. And I have officially petitioned the commissioner to reverse the ruling. I off a corner kick, my goalie caught it, and in comes flying in a Brazilian player who just like head first dives into my player, who was standing in front of the goalie, knocks into him and knocks the goalie into the goal. And they called it an own goal. I was sitting here playing and my brother was watching, and I'm like, I heard the whistle and I was like, oh, okay, they called a penalty. No, they're like, own goal. Like, I hadn't scored yet. In the first match I played, I dropped that one to nothing. And the second one, it looked like I thought that was going to bury me right there with that. And I ended up coming back to win somehow. But I want that goal differential. And I would like to hear your opinion on a ruling, Rich.
Well, if I were the commissioner, I would say, I'm sorry, you have to play within the whatever the game says, right? If the game says that's a goal, that's a goal. And it's, you get into really challenging territory if other similar situations arise and all of a sudden you got like three or four or five different people challenging the goal. So,
you know what, if there are that many problems with FIFA 18, then let's just shut it down, Rich.
No way. This online tournament is going to be fantastic, especially if I can get out of my group. If I can't get out of my group, then that's
well,
gonna be
a disaster. That would be great. I didn't think I had much of a chance to do that, but now I'm sitting there with 3 points and I need that goal.
Oh, that goal matters. I'm not suggesting that you will get struck down. I'm just saying if it were up to me, I'd say, look, it happened in the game counted it. What can you do? That's me. Yeah. I'm not saying you shouldn't get overturned. I think it's controversy. I think, you know, you're introducing a lot of anxiety and angst into the tournament that didn't necessarily have to be there, you know, but that's how you want to be. That's fine.
No. This is spicing things up a little bit.
It's definitely going to do that. No,
I don't. I don't. I don't even think my opponent's really disputing that. Like I said in the message that I sent, it's like this was obviously no fault of my opponent, but the game awarded a goal that it shouldn't have, and who knows what would have happened in that match if that goal hadn't been scored. He may have won somehow, because that motivated me to push forward a little more than I had been. I was sitting back a little bit. And I got a little more desperate and it actually paid off. I was playing a little conservatively before that, but yeah, it's just, I just wanted to see what comes of that. So I posted on Twitter and I got a couple of messages from people who are like, said they've never seen that before.
I had to
kind of think about it too. I'm like, okay, there's clearly something, this is not allowed. You can't dive into the goalie to push him in for an own goal. I knew that much, but then I had to make sure. So we'll see where that goes. But that's my FIFA World Cup experience so far. Overall, I haven't played too much of it, but I think it's pretty solid offering. I mean, it's not as substantial as it would have been if it was a standalone game. I mean, we can still debate whether it should have been or not. I obviously see why they did this. It's because of Ultimate Team. People are far more likely, there's going to be a far greater base of people who are willing to jump into the Ultimate Team when they don't have to rebuy another game. So the other thing that I noticed is that FIFA is not yet it hasn't gone into the EA Access vault yet, which is unusual. Usually it's mid-April to late April FIFA goes into the EA Access vault. Hasn't done it, so it looks like EA is trying to squeeze a few more sales out of it. Mills, what do you overall the World Cup offering that they have this year? Thumbs up.
Yeah, I think it's pretty good. I don't think we're ever going to see a standalone World Cup game or any kind of standalone FIFA game that's not connected to the main game anymore. It's just too easy to put it out digitally at this point. And I think that's one of the big problems here is that before you'd have to release World Cup as like disc base. Let's put it that way. If you release it singly without anything else, you have to make a physical copy. It's just so much cheaper to release it as downloadable. And like you said, Ultimate Team is where most of that's going to come from. Hey, they can make all the World Cup teams very easily. It's rosters and kits and just atmosphere. And they're already going to do that for the Ultimate Team side.
Well, there's stadiums too. Those stadiums are no joke to put all those real stadiums in.
Well, but isn't that stadium art they already have in the game?
I don't think so. These are a bunch of stadiums, a bunch of real places in Russia. So I think they had to build a bunch of those too. And that's no small effort.
If that's the case, that's awesome. That I take that back, being able to add that kind of stuff in. But again, I don't think we're ever going to see a physical separate FIFA game ever again. It's going to be FIFA 18, FIFA 19, World Cup pieces off of that, you know, the Women's World Cup, hopefully at some point, since we already have women's players, and that would be awesome. So,
I mean, part of me loves that. I mean, part of me really loves that because this is free. I bought FIFA. I bought it not that long ago, a month and a half ago, because for a while I hadn't even gotten close to my 10 hours on my EA Access. But then we got in our online league, which spurred me to get it. So I just, as a consumer, I think this is great getting this for free. And I understand it's tied to Ultimate Team, and I don't think that's a bad thing. I think if Ultimate Team can fund a World Cup mode for free. I think that's fantastic. I'm fully supportive of it. The one thing that's sort of a potential downer is because it is DLC only, you know, it I don't know sort of, not that it really matters, but like there's, since you don't have that physical copy, like it just, you won't be able to sort of as nearly as easily just pop it in and play it at some point in the future at like you would the more traditional disc. But then again, on the other hand, if you have FIFA 18, it'll be there. So that's probably not even a real thing. The more I think
about it. Well, yeah, it's interesting that we've gone 4 years since the last World Cup game, and we went from, well, we're only really going to do it, do the full complete product for the, at the time, what was, I guess, I don't know, was that considered last gen or current gen at the time, but it was the 360 PS3. They did it because they felt like there's a large, you know, number of nations across the world that don't have great internet access, or a great number of people in some of those nations across the globe that don't have great internet access. And here we are 4 years later, and you need the internet access to even play anything World Cup. And the other thing is, we go back to also, as we look at like a 2010 FIFA World Cup and how that acted as a bridge for a lot of people who maybe typically didn't play the regular FIFA game, played the World Cup, really got into it. And I know several of us were that way, TJ, myself, and others, and then became FIFA fans after that. And you can't do it that way. You've got to own FIFA 18 in order to play World Cup. So you're really not going to bring new people in, but their bottom line, I'm guessing, as far as the Ultimate Team goes, is going to make up for any of that in the long run.
Yeah, I mean, there's definite sort of downsides, like what you just said. I think the upside is bigger than the downside, in that, as you know, as a consumer who bought the regular game, just getting this for free, that's really valuable to me. It's a bummer that, you know, those other things may be the case. But, you know, ultimately the positives outweigh the negatives. But, it, you know, it's definitely not, you don't check every box like you would have in the past, so to speak.
Mills, a couple other games I'd like to hear from you on. Tennis World Tour, the second tennis game that released this year after we went something like 7 years without a tennis game. What are your thoughts?
So Tennis World Tour, I skipped AO Tennis earlier in the month because I heard that it was not great. And then I bought Tennis World Tour based on the fact that these are some of the top spin developers behind this game.
That was a $60 game, right?
Yes, it was a $60 game. Correct. Absolutely correct, Brian.
And I say that for a reason.
Yeah, because it is absolutely not a finished $60 game. It is not a finished $30 game. It is lucky to be called a finished $20 game. Mm-hmm. I had such high hopes for this because I've wanted a tennis game for so long, and and hearing that the Topspin guys are behind it just got my heart fluttering. And the animations, the ball doesn't hit the racket. I would say 50 to 60% of the time when you swing, which I'd be okay with if it wasn't for the fact that there are different buttons for every swing. Well, every swing, if you hit top spin every time, you will get a different, like, sometimes you get a slice, sometimes you get a flat shot. You don't actually always get a top spin shot. If you're not in position to hit a top spin shot, it will automatically give you like a slice. And I'm like, well, why give us the option to have different buttons then? The career mode is not bad, but it feels very shallow. It's missing some of the, while it has, I believe, 20 to 25 tennis licensed stars, it's missing a very large portion. There's no Williams sisters. It's missing some of the big ones. And the game just, it feels unfinished. It feels like it needs a patch or five to complete what it's doing. There's crowd sound is non-existent. They've said they have a roadmap. And here's my biggest problem with me making that statement. Roadmaps are for early access games. If I get a game on Steam and it says early access, or Xbox game preview and it says early access, give me a roadmap. I'm all for it. I know what I'm getting when I come in. This was a physical release. Like, they put this out as a disc release in addition to digital. This is not early access. This is being put out as a complete game. You can't. Like, there's no way this should have come out this month. This is a few months away from being anything close to a complete tennis game. And that's unfortunate because that would mean that two games came out this month that were both substandard in terms of quality of tennis. I've heard, have not experienced, that AO Tennis is better now after significant patching. That being said, still, it's hard for me to get past the fact that you're putting out a game that, again, would be a stretch to put out in what would be called early access.
I may have missed it, but did you mention it not having online play?
Oh, yeah. By the way, if you get the Legendary Edition, which I almost bought, you get a really awesome badge for online play. And when you open the game, there's a tab that says online play, and it's grayed out. And the only way you would have known that online play was not included is if you followed their Facebook page.
Yeah,
there's nothing on the store page. There's nothing in game that says it. And there might be a little like tab that says online play will be added later. Yeah, online play is on the roadmap. It's going to be patched in at some point. So like, what is the point? Like, how does anybody know that coming in? Again, this is, if it's early access and you tell me when I'm purchasing it, hey, online is going to be patched in later. You know what? I'm a little more forgiving of that. Because early access means you're getting a game in what's essentially alpha or beta stages, and it's going to be added, and you get to, and you, what you're doing is early adopting, and you get to help the direction of the game. This is not that. This was a physical release. This is a full release that did not have online play, even though it was supposed to. That right there shows you the game shouldn't have been released when it was.
Rich, you were looking forward to tennis this year, and now we have two games. Where has your interest level gone?
Well, I'm not there at all in an interest level with either of these two games. I've just got games that I'm already playing that are there. There's no room right now for me for those. The only way that I would have room is if either of them were amazing. And if neither of them are, I'm already playing games that I put in the amazing category, either from the game itself or the experience. Like, you know, the experience of playing in an online FIFA World Cup is just exciting and fun. And you know, I play MLB The Show, which is great. And I play Pro Evo, which is great. And I just, and it's, it may sound wrong, but I mean, I think it's how almost anyone who plays video games would be justified to feel that way. Is, you know, if you want to get my time and attention, my money, you got to be amazing. You got to be great. Good or below is just not even an option. I said this at PAX East. It was one of the things that I was talking about, you know, when I was discussing what it takes to market indie games. And one of the most important things is the game has to be amazing. It has to be fantastic for you to even have a chance. And so that's all that I play. That's what would stop me from playing either of these.
Yeah. Or it's gotta be on like Xbox Game Pass.
But even those, I only play the best stuff on there. Like I'm not going crazy playing everything, but the games that I play on, like, you know, Late Shift is a great example. I've played that twice. I spent 2.5 hours in it. I wouldn't call it a great game per se, but as an experience, it's unique, entertaining, and interesting. And we're talking 2 or 3 hours here too, right?
Yeah.
So there's that as well.
Yeah, it's a lot easier to be forgiving. So, Mills, let's shift gears to Madden NFL 19, because the game was announced. Terrell Owens is on the cover of the Hall of Fame edition. And they revealed, like they have for the past few years ahead of EA Play, a lot of the features for the game. They mentioned there's a new animation system with enhanced player control. There's going to be fan favorite celebrations. There's a lot of Ultimate Team stuff, which they went into further detail. Player upgrades, solo battles, squad challenges. They've got specialist positions, which I believe applies throughout Madden, not just Ultimate Team. That's a big thing. That's something I've been looking for like a decade. And then they're removing contracts from Ultimate Team. And you got a custom draft class creator for franchise mode. What are your takeaways from the first Madden news?
Well, let's talk specifically just about the Ultimate Team to start with. That Ultimate Team blog hits about every single pain point that players have had with Madden Ultimate Team over the years. Mm-hmm. Removing contracts has been a fight that players have had for up to, I think, since Ultimate Team was introduced. The power-up players last year becoming non-auction, non-trade, and essentially becoming dead money in inventory if they don't get upgraded again. Another problem that's now been fixed, because you can break those power-up players apart and get the cards that created them back and then sell those. Chemistries were another big Ultimate Team, because they relied on the developers to put the chemistries on the players. And if it was a bad chemistry that wasn't a part of the meta, the card could be, you know, not usable. Now you, on certain cards, you can put your own chemistries on or your own abilities on to, you know, tailor them to your lineup. So all of that sounds amazing. Like you said, the specific positionals, NFL's been calling edge rushers for 3 to 5 years now. Now you can put edge rushers and rush defensive linemen in there, or even a nickel linebacker, or how long have we been looking for a goal lineback? Something as simple as a goal lineback. And like you said, those mm-hmm. positional, those subpositions apply to franchise as well. So you won't only have to worry about you doing it, but like the computer will now fill those positions and have like a goal lineback. I don't know how they're going to fill them. I'd like to see how the computer uses those at some point. But even if it's just the best overall player in those spots, that's, you know, light years ahead of what we have already. News-wise about gameplay. So this is the new – I'm going to guess this is the new true step that they're talking about, where, you know, we'll see foot planning and stuff like that and more better animations between two or multiple players. We're going to have to see that in action. And luckily I think we'll get a chance to see that at EA Play. I'm sure. I like to see the franchise. They talked about archetypes and like different schemes for franchise mode. I'm glad to see that before the franchise official date of news that they're putting out, because they have like a playbook going now. I'm glad to see we got some franchise news, but everything we saw gameplay-wise that we've seen word-wise, I want to see an action EA Play, because we've heard a lot of this before. Let's be fair. We've heard a lot of promises about foot planning. We've heard a lot of promises about gameplay updates, and then, you know, we get it out to the millions, and it's broken within 2 weeks. So the gameplay stuff I want to see. The Ultimate Team stuff is a 10 out of 10. For the first time, I watched Madden community Twitter actually go like happy. The entire thing was happy about Ultimate Team. I was like, what's going on? So I think they hit that out of the park. This is the most excited I've been to see a game at E3 before in terms of sports games. Outside of console jumps, especially considering that even though they have a new senior producer in Carlos Guerrero, and we all know about Rex Dixon not being with the team anymore, and even though it's a little late in the process, I still feel like we're going to see kind of that new vision, especially in EA Play, because the developers are always at EA Play. I'm very excited at EA Play to see where the developers stand now and what we see of them and what we hear from them at EA Play. As much as I'm excited about the gameplay itself, I want to see what the direction is. Like, what do we hear from them? I think that almost may be more important than just the game this year.
Rich, did you see anything you like out of the Madden news?
No, but not in, I don't mean that in a way like in a negative. Like, I play Madden one way, online franchise. And when the game comes out, I will pick it up and I will not practice at all, and I will play the very first game of the season against whoever it is, and I will go from there. That has been less and less a recipe or more and more a recipe for failure the last couple of years, as the game has gotten even more complex and you really need to do a better job of understanding what's happening if you want to be successful. But that doesn't change the fact that that's exactly what I'm going to do, because that's how I like to play the game. Our online league, it'll be on Xbox One X this year. I know that. That'll be a change. So, no, but I don't – it's a month and a half before the game comes out? 2 months? Well, it comes out really early now, like August 1st
or 2nd.
Yeah, it's
early August.
Yeah.
That's the other thing we could mention is early August, which goes back to before Madden 12. Madden used to release in early August, and I think they moved it up to the end of August for two reasons. One is it got closer to the beginning of the regular season, so interest in the league was a little higher than releasing at the beginning of the preseason. But the other reason was there was the existence of an NCAA football, which was releasing in July, so they wanted to space them out more. Now I think it's critical that they do this. I think it gives them a big advantage where we've seen their sales kind of undercut by some of their own games, FIFA, NHL, NBA Live, just 2 to 3 weeks after Madden had been releasing, but especially NBA 2K, once they moved from October to mid-September, that was killing them. That was killing them. So now they've got an extra 3 to 4 weeks of sales before those big other sports games hit. So I think that was a smart move on their part.
Yeah, I agree. So I'll get it day one, play it, and I'm interested in it. But at this point in time, 2 months out, like looking at the super specifics of it is just not on the top of my list of anything I'm interested in doing.
All right. So as we've mentioned, E3 and EA Play just a few weeks away, the EA Play press conference, June 9th, the E3 press conferences for Microsoft, Nintendo, Sony and the like, June 10th and 11th, and then E3, the actual show floor, the few days after that. So just briefly, do we have any type of expectations? I think sports games in recent years have kind of been de-emphasized a little bit at the press conference because EA Play is a little different. They usually do hit on them, but it's not really the big reveals, the big trailer unveilings, and it's not as big of a deal. It's more like, here's our sports games, and here's what we're kind of focusing on this year. And I think from a quality of relevancy, it's actually been good for us, as opposed to them throwing up the flashy, gimmicky type of stuff that they used to do in the past and try to sell to this more general audience that's watching the conferences. They've actually, I think, been speaking more to the sports gamers out there because they know the general audiences don't care. You better get off the sports games quickly or tie them in some other way, whether it's to EA Access or whatever. So I think they've done a better job with that recently, but boy, I'll tell you, those conferences aren't getting any easier for me to watch. They're getting tougher to watch. They're just kind of grueling. And
they're terrible. I mean, let's be honest. They're terrible. There's really no need for them. I mean, this event is in many ways a relic of a different era. There is no real need for any of these companies to do these big press conferences. Now, the fact that they're doing them, it is certainly a great opportunity for them to promote their brands. I'm not saying there's of no value to them. But what Nintendo is doing and what Electronic Arts is doing and is, to me, more effective. You want to have multiple days of live coverage, live events, connecting directly with your audience. You know, these giant press conferences, and they're not press conferences, right? They're presentations in front of a weird combination of people that call themselves media and employees of the people putting it on and supporters and hangers-on are bizarre also. Like, they're just unnecessary, and they're, as you said, Brian, they're in a lot of ways just difficult to watch because the people that are on stage aren't people that are meant to be on stage. You know, like, it's difficult.
They're not super comfortable.
No, I mean, if you're on stage and talking to thousands of people, you should be good at that, right? You should understand that you need to be crisp and clear and brief and interesting and have a whole point and make every word matter. And then you move to the next thing and the next thing. And a lot of those people have no idea. And so they're generally terrible. I mean, I can't ever remember watching an E3 press conference and being entertained by it. I usually don't even watch them. Most of them have trailers that are showing the most nasty, horrible, violent stuff anyway. So that's another reason that I typically have less than Any interest in E3 presentations for that reason as well? Because like I typically would watch them at work because that's when they're on, and you can't because the content is so crazy. So yeah, I'm with you, Brian. These things are terrible, almost exclusively terrible.
Mills, what do you think about the upcoming press briefings? Do you have any expectations for any surprises, or what are you looking forward to, or maybe what are you, you know, ambivalent about?
So I don't think I think Rich is right that E3 itself is a little self-serving and not viable at this point. It's become, especially with the rise of content creators, E3 has become more of a place for them to meet than anything else. The conferences, most of the information is known before the conference even starts. There's already leaks about pretty much every game that's going to be shown at these conferences. Mm-hmm. And even after that, like Rich said, it's cool to see the trailer, but what does that really do for anybody outside of trailers that people are just going to look up on YouTube anyway? What I will say is that when you get to the individual conferences like EA Play, or like Bethesda holds theirs away from E3 now. The thing that I like the most about that is that it's a conference for fans of that specific developer. So like EA Play, when EA was at E3, we all know sports games kind of get hidden. Well, at E3, you were lucky to hear about FIFA, which is one of EA's big boys.
Yeah.
Now that EA plays out, you know, you're guaranteed to hear about FIFA. You're guaranteed to at least hear something about Madden. Last year, we found out about Longshot, but also the feet on the ground at EA Play. Like it was, I was there last year. I'm going to be there this year. It was full of EA fans, and even in the sports areas, we're full of EA sports fans.
Well, yeah, EA Play is different from E3. For those who don't know, EA Play anybody can go to.
Right.
Yeah,
correct. All you have to do is register for a ticket and you wait in a line and get in.
Let me correct myself, too. You can do that now with E3 also, though I think it's a little more difficult.
Gotcha. OK, yeah. So like I like EA Play a little bit more than I like E3. Having been to both, EA Play feels more inviting. It feels more intimate. Yeah, there are more opportunities to talk to the creators of the actual games, whereas at E3, everything's essentially behind a closed door. So that being said, what I expect to see on a national stage from EA Play, from the trailers or the conferences, is FIFA, obviously. And I expect to see something about Madden. We'll probably hear something about Longshot 2. I think everyone believes there's going to be a Longshot 2 at some point. That'll probably be where we see. But then we'll also see stories coming out of EA Play of what people are seeing. Well, we always see leaks of footage. Everyone's going to have a cell phone out at some point. We'll see leaks of footage, stuff like that. I don't think we're going to hear too much huge at EA Play from any of the games. Well, obviously, and Live will be there. NHL will probably be there. All the games will probably be there. I don't think we're going to get any huge sports game announcements from EA Play. If we do, the one leak that I've seen, it has been on the registration for EA Play, it specifically says Madden and PC in the same sentence.
That happened last year.
Exactly. Yeah, that's what I was about to say. That also happened last year. So I if there's going to be a big announcement, that might be it. But honestly, I think we've that ship has sailed. I don't think there's any way we're going to get PC for that anyway. So
going back to the other possibility that at least was raised, I don't know if we think it's there's any sort of likelihood here, Rich, but with Fight Night Champion going into the backwards compatibility, we had talked about the idea that that could be gauging interest for, or kind of in advance of a boxing announcement. I wouldn't put my money on that, but do you think that's at all possible coming in the next couple of weeks?
No, I don't think it's possible. I am actually playing Fight Night Champions. I bought it on when it came available, and it's really, really, really difficult in that story mode as you advance. Really, really, really difficult. that's just an aside. No, I don't think boxing is coming back this year. It's just I think that EA appears to me to kind of be a little bit like Take Two was a few years ago in shedding themselves from a couple of licenses. Mm-hmm. And sort of rethinking that, like they're I think, you know, when Take Two got rid of the MLB license and got rid of the NHL license, did not make those games anymore. The college basketball before, and this was way before you couldn't make college basketball anymore. Feels like EA is doing that with the PGA and probably with boxing. So that's what I think is going to happen. Unfortunately, I would love it if there would be a PS4 Xbox One era fight night. Don't get me wrong, I think that would be tremendous. I just don't see it happening.
Yeah, the last time we got any sort of surprise out of E3 or EA Play was when EA acquired the UFC license. And like you said, I don't think they're really looking to acquire licenses right now, and boxing would require them do that for several fighters, and that's where it gets expensive, and that's why we don't have a golf game from EA anymore. That's why we don't have a what's the other recent one? Tennis. EA no longer does, and so there's a lot of them being more careful with how they spend their money on licensing, but also can they make digital revenue off this game and those type of sports. Boxing, I don't see how you do an Ultimate Team, so. Or at least you do one successfully. They've done it for UFC. It's not really a hit there. So anyways, that's us throwing cold water on the whole EA E3 thing. But, you know, maybe it'll come out and this will be an interesting year for it. I don't
know. Absolutely.
So thank you, Rich Grisham, as always. Thank you, Mills Gaming TV. We will be back with another episode of the Press Row Podcast next week, and that will be the week as we head into E3 and EA Play, so we'll be gearing up for that.
And by the way, Brian, don't forget, stick around at the end of this episode. We have David Carducci talking about his new Out of the Park Baseball blog. So stick around for that right after this. Sorry about
absolutely. That. Absolutely. No, absolutely. We got to let them know why there's another 20 minutes on the podcast, Rich. It's not dead air. It's actual content. So thank you, Rich, for taking care of that. And thank you, everybody out there who listen to the show and continue on for this episode of the Press Row Podcast.
Well, hey, everybody. Welcome to this bonus section of the Press Row Podcast back here. This is Rich Grisham, and I'm really happy to introduce a newcomer to the show. It certainly won't be the last time, but it's the first time. A new good friend of ours. His name is David Carducci, and he is many things, which I'll let him tell you about. But one of the things that he is the head of a brand new site that is dedicated to all sorts of fun stories about Out of the Park Baseball. And the site is ootp-yacker.com, Yacker with two Ks. I'm happy to bring on Mr. David Carducci. How are you, sir? Thank you for being
here. Doing really well. Yeah, absolutely. Thanks for having me on.
So let's start at the latest, which is the website, the Yacker.
Sure.
What is it? And if I go there, what am I going to see?
Well, I'll tell you what. It's been a kind of a short and fast love affair with Out of the Park Baseball. I really got hooked last year, and it's really meant a lot to me and also my family. I have two stepsons. One's freshman in high school, and the other just finished his first year at college. And he and I have really bonded over it. Baseball is something we both share a passion for. And, you know, it's given us something to kind of way to spend some time together and to share our love of the game, share our love of baseball history, but also we've always loved over the 5 years that he and his mom and brother have been in my life. We've loved to analyze every little trade, every little decision made by pretty much every baseball team. And so now this kind of allows us to expand that. And you know, while he's been away at college, it's been something where we've actually been able to use it to get through some difficult times and It just means so much to us. So we thought, what if we did a little blog and invite some friends of ours, some people who I know over my years as a sports writer and working in college athletics and covering pro athletics as a reporter. Let's bring some of them in. And I've always been a huge fan of alternate histories. I remember backpacking through Europe right after college in 1993 and reading a great book called Fatherland. And it was a kind of a, what would the world look like had
Richard Harris, right? He was the author, Richard Harris, right? I read that book.
Great book. They made it into a movie that wasn't as good, but the book was just fantastic. And it was something that we would debate, with sports. What if this trade wasn't made? What if this player had never gotten hurt? What if, the classic, what if Babe Ruth was never traded to the New York Yankees? What if there was no Nanette? And the amazing thing was, here's this baseball game that allows you to kind of do those things. And so I thought, well, let's start a website. The great thing about Out of the Park is that, when you go on the website and into the communities, you see these great projects that people are doing on their own. And I thought this would be a neat place to kind of collect them and have some great discussions about, what would happen if this little part of baseball had changed, and what would happen if you made this trade or that. The discussions can be endless. So the idea was, let's get a bunch of people together and have them kind of create their own passion projects. So for me, it's the 1976 Red Sox team that I remember fondly from spending my summers in Fenway Park. My grandfather was a Red Sox season ticket holder, and spent all my summers there going to Boston from Cleveland. And what would have happened after Game 7 if a few things didn't happen? You look back at the Red Sox that year and Fred Lynn coming off of that incredible 1975 season and his contract squabbles. And he had a couple major injuries to guys like Bill Spaceman Lee. And, could I keep some of that team together, but then also not squander those last years of Carl Yastrzemski's career? And there's a guy who really deserve to have a World Series championship under his belt. Can I add the right pieces to really kind of have the Red Sox build off of the disappointment in 75 instead of allow them that to kind of sink the team really for quite a while? I'm really enjoying doing that. But we've got so many people who've come up with some really interesting things. The what if Rocky Colavito hadn't been traded by the Cleveland Indians. I've got two good old-time friends of mine, one who's a NASA engineer. Both are Pirates fans, and they're going to take over the Pirates right after Barry Bonds left Pittsburgh, and see if either one of them can find a way to avoid 20 straight losing seasons. This is the kind of thing that this game was made for. It's amazing to have a baseball game where really there's unlimited ways to play it, and it could never get old. I could see myself on a desert island playing this game and never getting bored. you can't get bored with it, and that's a pretty amazing thing.
So you have a very interesting background, and that's brought you some of the folks that are participating with you. Tell us a little bit about that background, because you've done a couple really interesting things over your career.
I always wanted to be a sports writer from as far back as I can remember. In fact, it really kind of crystallized itself for me in the mid-80s when I read a book called Beyond the Sixth Game. Oddly enough, it's kind of the inspiration for my Red Sox project that I'm working on now. And reading Peter Gammons and reading Gammons in the Boston Globe every summer while I was, again, visiting my grandfather, those stories were so great, and I loved that knowledge that Peter Gammons had and the insight and the connections, and it's all I ever wanted to do. So I went to a small liberal arts college with the goal of becoming a better writer, and then graduate school to become a sports writer, and really lucky to get a job at a small daily newspaper where they would let me do really pretty much anything that I wanted to do. They had Cleveland Indians credentials, so I was at the old stadium and then Jacobs Field every chance I could get, writing about the Cleveland Indians, and got to cover the entire 1995 World Series in Atlanta and Cleveland. Traveling back and forth was pretty much right out of college, and had this great opportunity to meet and chat with Peter Gammons on the field and talk to him about how, you know, he really inspired me into this career.
Right. Like being able to tell somebody that is a really, really awesome thing that you got to be able to do.
Yeah. I have a great photo of me with Gammons on the field in Atlanta prior to game one of the 1995 series. And, I'm going to put that up on the blog here soon because it kind of belongs with that project. But I'll never forget that too. That feeling of, you know, I'm really living a dream. You know, one of the great things about covering baseball is the ability to be on the field and watch batting practice and lean up on the batting against the batting cage. And I remember I was leaning up on the cage and watching Fred McGriff launch balls into the right field stands and thinking, wow, could this get any better than this? You know, I'm about to watch my childhood team, the Indians, play in a World Series. And here I am leaning up against the batting cage, watching, you know, a great hitter hit, just crush the ball and see it up close like that. I didn't even realize it, but there was a guy standing right next to me leaning up against the cage too. And he said, boy, there's nothing like being here right before game one of a World Series, is there? And I looked over and it's Greg Maddux.
Wow.
I'm thinking, wow, I'm here with the greatest pitcher of my generation.
Right.
You know, and he's starting up a conversation with me.
That's unbelievable.
You know, what a way to start a career. You know, it really kind of baffles the mind. I've been really lucky when it comes to those things, you know, just the opportunity. The very first person I ever interviewed, my very first day as an intern prior to getting that job with this local daily newspaper called the Record Courier, I was interning at the Akron Beacon Journal. I walked in first day and the sports editor said, hey, do you know anything about golf? And I rattled off the last 10 U.S. Open winners. And he said, okay, well, we know you do. I need you to go down to this new course that was opening up. Happened to be a Jack Nicklaus course. And my first ever interview one-on-one was with Jack Nicklaus. it's just been, you know, you don't make a lot of money as a sports writer. You're never, you know, unless you really, really make it big, like a good friend of mine, Brian Windhorst, who's now at ESPN. You know, some people are just lucky to make a living nowadays too, with the way the newspaper business is, but to get a chance to be there, for sports history and a chance to write about it and document it, and witness it in person, there's really nothing like it.
Fascinating stuff. So before we let you go, you mentioned a couple, but what are some of the other people that are participating with you at the Yakker and some of the other subjects you're going to dive into or have?
Well, the great thing is that right now that it's we're starting to, as I'm talking to the guys who and girls who are kind of coming up with some ideas, is, you know, the chance to, for all of them to interact. And a good friend of mine, when I covered the Cleveland Browns for 6 years, my roommate on the road was a guy named Frank Derry, who was a longtime beat writer for the Cleveland Indians and actually owned the Indians team magazine called Indians Inc. And has been, you know, he's retired now, but he's been around through a lot of the history of the Indians. And I approached him and got him interested in the game, and he kind of is falling in love with it and the idea of it, of coming up with something for him to do. And I thought, oh, he's going to do something with one of those Indians teams that he covered. And instead, it turns out that his great uncle was in the front office in the Yankees organization when Babe Ruth was traded from Boston. And he was actually a part of making that happen. And he's got some great photos and great family stories and things like that. So his idea was, you know, usually there's the twist where Red Sox fans want to see what would have happened had Babe Ruth stayed in Boston. He actually wants to take it from the position of, what if my relative never traded for Babe Ruth? What would the Yankees have looked like? And so he's going to take on that, but he's also going to mentor a few people who are doing some other interesting replays, like, again, the Rocky Colavito. And what if he hadn't been traded? And, you know, he was around during that whole era when the Indians would just have fire sale after fire sale. So he's going to talk with Chris Reed, who's doing that replay, and do a lot of commentary, possibly bring in some old players and some old people who are still here around in Cleveland to talk about that time period as he's replaying the game. So many fun things. I love the Pirates project. We also have someone who was in minor league baseball. He was with the Las Vegas minor league team, working in the Dodgers organization as he did all of their film work. And so really has a feel for minor league baseball and its place in developing talent. And so he wants to do something with the Cincinnati Reds from around the time period when they traded for Ken Griffey. But instead of trading for Ken Griffey, when the Reds in 99 were, coming off of, right, when they traded for Griffey, they had lost the one game playoffs and had a really, some real chemistry with some good young players ready to come up. And so he's going to replay the Reds starting right after that one game playoff at loss and not bring Griffey into town and see if, you know, you can keep some of that chemistry, but also develop some of the great young players in that Reds organization. I think that's going to be a lot of fun to follow.
Excellent. Well, Mr. David Carducci, again, the site is ootp-yacker.com, right? Did I have that right?
And yep, you have that right.
And
I spent a lot of time doing radio and hosting my own shows, and I tend to bloviate. So I hope I didn't keep you a little longer than you are.
Not at all. This is fantastic. We could go another bit, but I want to be respectful of your time.
So
we'll bring you back on soon, because there's a whole bunch of great stuff going on in the world of sports and sports video games.
We've got some people too, again, who are active beat writers who, you know, we could probably get on the show along with us too to talk about some of the things that we're doing.
Fantastic. I love it. Well, thank you for joining us. We appreciate it.
Absolutely.
And we'll talk to you again soon.
Fantastic.